This is Tom Luongo.
This is Alex Craner.
This is Franco Terrazano.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough.
This is Joshua Allen, the Cowboy Preacher, and you're listening to the Sean Newman Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, folks. How's everybody doing today? Happy Tuesday. Reminder, if you're waking up going, where on earth is the mashup? Maybe you've been away for a couple weeks. Maybe you haven't been paying attention. It's all good. The mashup is now on Fridays, 10 a.m., live streaming and then uploaded shortly thereafter. So we get a new time, Fridays, 10 a.m., the mashup. And if you're looking for that, you got to wait a couple of days. Okay, let's start here. Silver Gold Bull. They, of course, are my favorite precious metals dealer, offering a full suite of services to help you buy, sell, and store precious metals. They ship your metal discreetly, fully insured, and with tracking straight to you. If you have not tried it, I don't know what you're waiting for, but in fairness, you don't know what's in store for you. Make a purchase today, and then you can see exactly what I'm talking about. See the metal in your hand. Be like April and Linda today when they're looking at it, and they're like, oh, this is pretty. You know, I wonder how many people, when they come in studio, folks, I'm going to be their first when they're the first time they ever touch a piece of silver. Yeah. It's been cool to watch in studio. If you haven't done it yourself, I promise you won't be disappointed. If you just want to find out more information, you can shoot an email or shoot a text to Graham. It's down in the show notes. He'd love nothing more than to hear from you. And of course, you still got them offering the special feature pricing on everyone's favorite silver coin, the Royal Canadian Mint Silver Maple Leaf. Available for you, nobody else. You can't find it online. For all details, silvergoldbull.ca. Well, if nothing else, shoot Graham a text saying, hey, thanks for doing what you do, or an email, whatever floats your boat, folks. They are supporting independent media, and in our world, our climate, I'm not saying it's the most unique thing, but let's be clear, it's pretty rare, and would love for you to continue to send your support of them supporting me. Does that make sense? I think that makes sense. CalRock, your trusted partners in surplus oil field equipment. Leading supplier of new, used, and reconditioned oil field production equipment in Canada. But that's not all. Tank fabrication, new and refurbished fluid storage tanks, trucking, pump jacks, and demolition. CalRock.ca. You know, Dan, owner of CalRock, he's another one of those guys who's a supporter, obviously, of the podcast. And he's going to be at the S&P Presents Cornerstone Forum here in just a few days. Man, it is coming up quick. It is coming up fast. What do we got here? Now I'm going to pull it up. I should have had this up right away. I'm going to filibuster here for a couple seconds while I count down. Here we got 11 days as this is airing before the Cornerstone Forum. We have 6 tickets left for the event. So if you haven't purchased yours yet, you still have a little bit of time, but you're probably running out of time for a babysitter or configuring your weekends, et cetera, et cetera. So if you haven't bought your ticket, I don't know what you're waiting for. I know I'd said, I was getting, hey, sell out. And then we rejigged a couple things and we found a couple extra tickets. So it's a way to get a few more of you in the building because we want a full house. So there's 6 tickets left. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Come on down to the S&P Presents Cornerstone Forum. I just got the schedule done. I've got the schedule that's going to be put on all the tables. Man, it is looking sharp. The wife kind of gave me the, oh, yeah, it looks good. And I'm like, looks good. Come on. We're going to start it out. Here's what you got to look forward to. Chris Sims, Tom Luongo, Mikkel Thorpe, Curtis Stone, Prodnick, that's Chuck, Dave Bradley, Alex Craner. In the afternoon or in the evening, Martin Armstrong is going to be doing a virtual. Ethan Hardy, 2-time Grandmaster Champion for Fiddlin' of Canada. He's going to be doing the entertainment during supper and for a smidge time after. Did I mention he's a blacksmith as well? Just a eclectic group of human beings is going to be in Lloydminster on the 27th. Another cool additional feature to this is, so you got all these speakers, and I'm going to be doing roundtables throughout the day, but also, for the first time ever on a on the S&P stage. Chris Sims is going to run two of the roundtables as well. So she's going to be running a roundtable at one point with Chuck Prodnick, Dave Bradley, and then Alex Craner. And her second one is with Curtis Stone, Mikkel Thorpe, and Alex Craner. So if you're looking for a little different spice on what has been going on the stage at the S&P Presents, we're going to have a little bit of fun. We're having a little bit of fun on this day. And the schedule is a banger. Essentially, each speaker is given 14 minutes or less to give where the world is at today. That's the first half, maybe the dark of the world. And then the second half, after lunch, the bright side is going to be like, let's talk about some ideas, some solutions. What can you do to help navigate the coming storm of the year ahead? And I'm telling you, I'm looking a little forward to this. And then Ethan Hardy, I was talking about having a harpist. I think that's what harpist. And I think that's still in the cards here for the year ahead, for hopefully the next Cornerstone event, hopefully. But this time around, we're going to have a Canadian champ fiddler on stage. And I think that's going to be a pretty cool feel to it. So if you haven't bought your tickets, go down in the show notes. Six left, man. Six left. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm excited. I've never done a full day event. This is going to be, if you're coming, you know. And if you're not coming, I don't know what you're holding back on. You should definitely grab your tickets. S&P Presents Cornerstone Forum, April 27th in Lloydminster. April 28th, I don't know why I'm babbling on so much this morning, but April 28th is Sunday morning, 9 a.m. at the Moose Lodge. We paid the deposit. It is done. We got the Cowboy Preacher, Cam Milliken, Tanner Nadei going to be on stage in a miniature S&P Presents style, talking Bible, Jesus, Cornerstone, and with a little roundtable after that's done. All kids, family, all welcome. We got Shine Christian Academy going to run some activities in the basement for the kids. That way you can come, you can enjoy the speakers, your kids can come, they can go downstairs and have a little bit of fun as well. And so that is on April 28th. That's free of charge. Donations accepted, of course, but free of charge. If you got nothing, just stop on in. Moose Lodge, let's fill the house there as well. Okay, enough about the weekend. RecTech Power Products. Another guy who's going to be in attendance on the 26th, 27th, 28th is going to be Al from RecTech Power Products. They've been committed to excellence in the power sports industry for 20 years. They got a full lineup including Can-Am, Ski-Doo, Sea-Doo, Spyder, Mercury, Evinrude, Mahindra, Roxer. Get your boats, folks. It's getting close to that time where it's going to be deck season, it's going to be lake season. Oh man, so many great things. I love when things start to melt. It's springtime, you know. They're open Monday through Saturday, and they got they can hook you up with any parts. They got a parts department full of all the odds and ends that you could possibly imagine. And if you haven't stopped into their location on the west side of Lloydminster, you really should. Like it is packed with a ton of stuff from quads to golf carts, boats, on and on and on, lawnmowers, et cetera, et cetera. There's a ton there. You just got to stop in and find out what they're cooking with. RecTechPowerProducts.com, that's where you can find out everything, or stop on the west side of town. Ignite Distribution out of Wainwright, Alberta. That's Shane Stafford. He can supply industrial safety, welding, automotive parts, on-site inventory management to help make sure you keep on cruising. Essentially, Shane is fantastic. He's part of our For the Kids' Sake group that helps bring people into Lloydminster. We had April and Linda at our last meeting, and if you're looking for somebody to work with who cares deeply and will about not only his business but his community, this is a guy that puts his right foot forward. Give him a call, 780-842-3433. Okay, I've babbled on for almost 10 minutes. That's longer than usual. I'm a little excited. We're getting close. So let's get on to that tale of the tape. The The first is a three-time Team Canada powerlifter and North American deadlift record holder. The second, former Canadian track and field champion in 1986, NCAA All-American in 84, chartered professional coach, author, Unsporting, How Trans Activism and Science Denial Are Destroying Sport. I'm talking about April Hutchinson and Linda Blade. So buckle up. Here we go. Welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast. I'm joined by Linda Blade, April Hutchinson. So thanks for, making the tour. Linda's not so bad. I mean, you've been in the studio once. We had a great chat the first time around. Yeah. But April, you've made, planes, trains, automobiles type thing to get here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hong Kong.
How's the trip been out west? Because this is your first time out to this area, correct?
Yeah, I've never been to Alberta. Yeah.
Pull that mic right into you. No worries.
Yeah. No, I've never been to Alberta, so my first time. It was pretty good.
Minus the airports.
Yeah, minus the little flight delay, but I didn't actually know it was a four-hour flight, so that was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, Canada happens to be a big country, as it turns out.
Yeah. That was good.
Okay, before we get going, I'm going to do this now so that I don't interrupt conversations. I've been doing this. Everybody's like on anticipate. What is Sean doing?
What is Sean doing?
Here you go. Okay, so a gift for each one of you for coming to the studio.
Look at this.
Yeah, you got to open it up. There you go. What's on inside of it?
What is a coin?
Oh, look at that.
So it's a 1 ounce silver coin from Silver Gold Bull.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Silver Gold Bull is one of the major sponsors of the podcast. And so any guest that ventures into, the octagon, the 12 by 12 in here, you get
Thank
the,
you. This lovely. Is really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a silver 1 ounce coin from Silver Gold Bull. So thanks
thank
for
you.
Making the journey here.
Thank you, Sean Newman. And thank you.
For the kid's sake.
Silver. Yeah.
Silver Gold Bull is the one with the coin.
Silver Gold
Bull. For the kids' sakes, the group that brought you into Lloyd. Mm-hmm. Kyle Koza is the guy who paid for the flight to get April
out
here.
Yes, thank you, Kyle.
So there's there's this whole group of people that have come together to help make this happen. And to have you two wonderful ladies in here to talk about some of the upside down of our world. But and you're both experiencing that. You know, where you both sit, I guess I'm just kind of curious to just kick this off. I'll let you two decide where this conversation goes. But, where do you see the future going right now? Linda, you were just at a rally in Edmonton.
Yep.
April, you're living it right now, being ejected from your sport and everything else that goes on with that. Where do you two ladies see this going, I don't know, in the next, what are we at? We're April, by the end of this year and into the future. Is this, you got Riley Gaines and all that down in the States. Do you see hope? Or are you pretty beat up on where we're at and where we're heading to?
Well, both, right? Pretty beat up. I mean, look at April's suspended as we speak for being a bad girl. For bad girl speaking up when she should have. She did the right thing, and now she's getting punished for it. However, Riley and so many other people were making progress. And I believe that, I don't know about April, I can't speak for you, April, but I feel like there is hope. It's so insane it can't continue. That's how I keep looking at it. At some point the dam is going to break and people are just going to be so tired of it and we're over it. And that was so 2020s. You know what I'm saying? And now we got to move on.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I agree. And
so 2020.
I've told Linda this, I'm so tired. And yeah. I told her this the other day. I've lost a lot of sleep and I'm still very tired. And just this last year has been just mentally draining. And I still can't compete to this day. I think I can start competing in November. And even now I'm kind of toying. Do I want to go back to the CPU? And, just for the way they've treated me, right? I was even talking to Linda today. I'm still thinking about suing them for their pure neglect of my, they've catered to this man, and neglecting my mental health, right? And just, suspending me. And, but I would do it all over again, right? Why should I back down and not be part of Team Canada again? So, I'm going to keep training. I will go back, but I would do it all over again. I do see light at the end of the tunnel. I do have to keep going forward. I do have little nieces to look after that want to play sports. So at the end of the day, if I don't lift again, I guess I don't really care about that. I do care about the future of sports. So,
yes.
I had a discussion with, it gets into men competing in women's sports. I had a discussion surrounding, like, why is that such a bad thing? And I feel like you two can really expand on this, because I'm like, well, it's funny. I got Linda and April coming in. I'll just throw it at them. And I can rehash all the reasons why. Because, I mean, last time I had both of you on, we talked in depth of what you saw personally. And then, Linda, what you've, you know, like just the physiology of it. I think I'm saying the right word. But why does it matter? Why, you know, why should people care? You know, like we literally just read a story about I can't even remember the terminology. It's, but essentially Ontario ruled to allow a person to have
vagina
constructed
as well as
a penis.
Yeah.
Paid for by the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't believe I'm reading this in the news. Mm-hmm. And they're flying them, they're paying for it down in Texas and on it goes. And you're like, this is, like, we're into absurd land. We have been for a while. But when it comes to, you know, like, why does it matter if a man goes and competes in a women's sport, if he's got all the right hormones and he's got all these things? I don't even know how to ask the right question on this, because I, you know, like, to me, it's pretty black and white. But, you know, there's a lot of people coming around to the conversation now and maybe tuning in for the first time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, truthfully, the thing that people don't understand if you're not in sports is that there's a lot of situations. I have a track and field background, for example, and there's a lot of situations where you're in a track club and you're training, and men and women are training together all the time. And like, even when I was growing up, my coach would, for example, when we're doing hill sprints, give the girls a head start, and the boys would start 10 meters later and chase us down. And so the idea was, can you get to the top of the hill before the guys catch you, like catch up with you? Like, it's a training incentive to be around guys. Like, it does force you to be better. Like, even NCAA basketball women's teams play men to get better. So there's the training context. And then even before that, there's the recreational context where you have ultimate frisbee leagues, where you got men and women on team. So there's a lot of different contexts where you can be physically active around with both sexes. But when it comes to serious competition, where there's a winner and a loser and you're going for the top, top notch position, when it comes to serious sport, everybody still has to acknowledge that no matter the amount of hormones you put into a guy, no matter whether he's wearing lipstick, a wig, a dress, whatever he's doing, he never becomes a female. You're never going to get rid of that competitive advantage. And that those two categories are separate. They're completely should be separate. They are separate because they're separate bodies, separate designs, different models. And as when I was here last time, I told you, Sean, it's very much like you have NASCAR and Formula One. Like, it would drive people crazy if you went to a NASCAR race and you saw a Formula One car, because they're different designs. It's not even like whether one will beat the other one, which in human case, a man will almost always beat a woman. But if he's a terrible athlete and she's a great athlete, she might beat him. Who cares? But there's no meaning if you don't separate the different designs. They're categorically different. And there's no way you're going to erase that from a man's body. He belongs in male sport. What do you think?
Exactly. And we talked about this today. There's a reason why men have a 60% advantage over females in powerlifting, right? Women are not designed to do bench press.
Exactly.
So for Anne, for example, the male powerlifter in my category, he went and he beat women by 400 pounds. Okay.
In the bench press.
No, combined. Oh. I think it was like,
forgive me,
even just like, I think it was like 100 to 200 pounds on bench press. Wow. It was crazy. But I mean, and that's something I've been training at for 4 years. And my bench has maybe gone up 10 to 15 pounds at best. Maybe a woman's bench would go up 10 pounds per year to 15. Mm. So, I mean, we're just not designed like that. So, I mean, again, goes back to we're not designed that way. We're biologically different. And again, goes back to chromosomes. It's not a feeling. Okay, it comes down to chromosomes. So And then I'm fighting my federation on that right now, too. Like, right now, men can compete at a local level, right? But when you get higher, then comes the testosterone levels, right? And again, I'm fighting them on that, too, because now you're setting up little girls to, like, go into their first competition to lose. And what is that setting little girls up to, like, lose on their first event? Like, that's basically setting them up for failure. So what is that teaching them? Well, that they're not going to want to keep competing if they're just literally losing and losing and losing, even at like a public school event, right? So, I mean, it's just that's why they have separate categories. It's, you know, it's just the amount of differences between men and women is, I mean, it's always been separated. So I don't know, like, yeah, I just have nothing much more to say about that.
You're wearing the Danielle Smith t-shirt. I stand with Danielle Smith.
Yeah.
Common sense for the win. What did you think of her policy on just the transgender issue at a whole, right? Because that came out, is that 2 months ago now? It's a little
January
while ago.
January 31st.
Thank you. Yeah. What did you think of everything she said?
Yes, I was so happy that at least one premier in one province in Canada has the courage to say, look, there is an ideology out here that's quite destructive to children and youth, and it's quite destructive for women's sports, for sports in general. And if we don't find the right guidelines, then it's going to continue to get worse and worse, and there's going to be a lot of controversy and unhappiness across the province. And, you know, so she's starting with sports, which is the obvious one. You should have leagues that are female only, or at least categories in every sport. There has to be at least one category that's for female only. You can have mixed in a, like, you can have other kinds of categories, but there has to be at least one category where female athletes can go and compete fairly. Bravo. With respect to the children who are getting body parts cut off too early, or puberty blockers, blocking their puberty and just going into cross-sex hormones during the early stage, middle stages of the growth spurt. It makes sense. Don't interrupt growth. Human puberty is not a disease. It's something people have to go through. So for her to say, look, we're going to limit medical intervention, maybe we can find another approach where if somebody is gender dysphoric, you can find the mental help that you need, the get treatment that, you know, if there's a discord between body and mind, why would we damage the body and not treat the mind? Just treat the mind and leave the body alone.
Did you read the 15,000 person study from the Netherlands? Did you see that?
Yes.
That basically went, you know,
it's
like...
It's a big mistake.
I shouldn't laugh.
It's just it's terrible.
We need a landmark study to tell us that, right?
Of course.
But, you know, I mean, there's just so much going on where we don't use common sense to go, like, this isn't good.
No.
You know, we're letting younger and younger kids decide and exposing them to these things that don't make any sense to any adult. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, I can't imagine what percentage of adults actually are like, oh, yeah, this makes complete sense.
But the problem is the kids wouldn't even think that thought, that they might be born in the wrong body, which can never be true. They might think they are, but who put that thought in their head? The school system, online people, personalities, influencers. I mean, so if without extra help, like if you were just growing up on a farm somewhere, a kid would never think that thought, or they might think, well, I wonder what it'd be like if you're a little boy, like to be a girl, or like you might have a transient thought that just, oh, maybe, you know, it'd be interesting. But nobody would be convinced, unless you're telling a kid they're born in the wrong body, nobody would ever think, hey, I shouldn't have been born this way. Like, that happens so rarely, and it's mostly in little boys traditionally, like very, very rarely. But now you put that online and every kid thinks they're special and they're born in the wrong body, and then it's supported in the schools.
Supported in law.
In law. And it's supported throughout. And then, of course, our government puts the law forward that, you know, you always have to affirm, affirm, affirm. Which means what you're doing is you're taking a child who very well might be gay or lesbian when they just finally go into adulthood. And you're just saying, oh, well, if you're, you know, nonconforming, like let's say you're a little boy and you like pink. Like, oh, you must be a girl. Well, no, like you're going to literally change that boy's physiology because he just doesn't
likes
play
a color or likes playing.
Like that is so transphobic. I can't even believe that. Like that we're back there again. Like well, like you're saying you can't be that. You've got to somehow conform to some stereotype. Like that is the most ridiculous thing about all this.
Well, like we were talking about today, like me, like I suffered sexual trauma when I was a little girl at the age of 5. And after that happened, I literally wanted to be a little boy because I thought, well, if I'm a little boy, no men will ever touch me again. So for a couple of years after that, and then I became like, I started drinking to help me like feel better in my own body, right? Because I was so uncomfortable. I felt like a little boy up until the age of 10. And then I started drinking, right? But I thought, if I'm a little boy, I won't get abused anymore. But that was sexual trauma. And I didn't deal with my sexual trauma ever. And then I found booze. But I never got help for my mental health. But think of how many kids that have been sexually traumatized that don't feel comfortable in their own skin, that never have help, that don't have the parents to help them, that don't, like, look at our mental health crisis right now. We don't have, like, I know in my city, we don't have hospitals. All those psychiatric hospitals have been torn down. Then we have that video you just showed me with that leader that's, hey, come over here, like, be trans, like, you know, convert, but, you know, all this other stuff. And, like, I actually think that the age should be higher, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I think it's a little low.
Absolutely. That's what the Dutch study, you know, and now the Cass report came out this week in the UK, like the Dr. Hillary Cass did a big review of the NHS and Tavistock, all of this gender clinics and stuff in the UK. And the report is basically saying, like, man, like, we have to hold off until at least 18 years of age. These kids would grow through it. They would just grow right through this phase, and they're regretting it on the other side. If you intervene and change their body and do irreversible harm, the way that was described in Abigail Schreier's book. But I mean, it's just been so universally sort of put out there, and the advocacy of the trans activist, the trans movement, and the gender ideology is just so prolific in the West that it really has been like a decade-long cult that has just taken everybody's imagination and made us believe things that aren't true. And the medical establishment never even did proper research to determine whether this really helps at all or not. You know, people were always told, well, if you don't affirm, you know, the body of these kids, they'll commit suicide. In fact, they're more suicidal after. So that's what Hillary Cass was warning, that it's even just socially transitioning, even if you don't touch them medically, even just socially transitioning, you have to be very careful because it causes mental disruption and mental harm. So we don't know the first thing about this. It hasn't been really researched. And yet we have governments like Trudeau was just putting it out there like, you must affirm on penalty of going to prison. Like, why? It wasn't even well researched. And now people are saying, no, hold on. In Europe, you know, Sweden, Finland, Netherlands, all these places are saying, stop, put on the brakes. This is not the right kind of treatment for these kids. And yet Canada, USA, full speed ahead. We're going to keep, you know, putting them all these drugs and surgery. Well, why? Like, it doesn't make sense right now, Sean. Like, I every day you just look around and you think, what are we doing? I mean, I was at the rally yesterday, or the sports rally, pro-trans, at the legislature. They're all trying to malign Daniel Smith. These kids, like, they had 3 or 4 athletes who consider themselves to be trans, and they were all female. So they didn't even have anything to complain about because we already have women's sports. You know, they're already in women's teams, so they're protected. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about, but they all have trauma, right? Like, I showed you some of those videos. I just sat there in a lawn chair. They didn't know who I was, and I'm just sitting there observing. What are you saying? Like, what's the justification? And it doesn't make sense. They're just in pain, and they're going through sport with these social issues on their shoulders, and they're attributing it to the coach didn't use the right pronoun, so I quit. Really? Just because of pronoun? Like, because somebody's telling them if they don't, then they don't respect you, right? And then you get the adults start talking, so the NDP people, and they start talking, and everything they're saying is either misleading or outright falsehoods. Yet those are the kids, those are the parents and the adults or whatever, that these kids, when they go through psychological trauma, they sort of adhere to a bunch of adults who are lying to them.
Yeah. I mean, it's I don't know. This is why, you know, you're wearing the Danielle Smith shirt, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting for somebody who isn't in our province, because there's a lot of people frustrated by Danielle Smith on a lot of different topics.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one, when you bring it back to it, what other premier has stood up and put their foot forward and even stepped into this?
Well, Higgs in New Brunswick.
And
on the child, like telling parents, you have to at least let parents know if you're going to you're going to call the kid a different name or whatever at school. That's good. Parents should be involved in their children's lives. And I think Saskatchewan has done it too on that front. Like, parents' right to know. But nobody's attacked tackled the sports issue specifically except Danielle Smith.
And I'll have to say, the reason I wear this shirt and support Danielle is not just because of the sports policy, but because of my past of
trauma.
Of trauma. Yes. And yeah.
Can you expand on that for me?
Well, I mean, I've only shared my story a couple times. And I don't really know what the kind of crowd will be tonight. I'm very open to sharing it if it does help parents. But, I mean, like I said, I was sexually abused when I was 5. And, I mean, I'm very grateful for what happened to me, because I would never have found sports. And even with my whole – I mean, so after I was sexually abused I kind of turned myself into a little boy. I kind of cut my hair off. I hung out with the little boys, hung out with my brother and his friends. I kind of molded myself into a little boy. I actually was so fearful. I thought my own father was going to touch me. I thought my dad would molest me. Any man that would look at me, I thought was going to touch me. when I started hitting puberty, like when I started developing, I would wear hoodies, I would cover up my body, and I was so uncomfortable. It was the hardest time going through puberty that I remember just being in a swimming pool. It was uncomfortable wearing a bathing suit. And again, I thought, like, even my dad would be looking at me, wanting to be with me and stuff like that. And so that's when I started drinking, because I thought, oh, you know, that made me uncomfortable. Like, it just took me away. It just took me to a whole other world, you know, that I didn't have to deal with these uncomfortable feelings. And I started getting promiscuous. And actually, when I got abused by my neighbor, I actually started being promiscuous in the neighborhood. And I got promiscuous with little girls and little boys. And I was like, you know, I wanted to see their private parts. And it just opened me up to being curious, right? And but when I started drinking at age 12, going through puberty, that's when I basically really started drinking hard. And I was probably a full-blown alcoholic by the age of 17. So, and that basically kind of got me through puberty, my drinking. And I probably went to my first rehab at the age of 19. That's when my parents were like, wow, like, we got to send you off to rehab. So my alcoholism basically got me through those hard times. Now, if I was like that today, I could very well be trans. You know what I mean? Like, if my parents were like the parents today, they'd be like, oh, let's get her on some hormones or puberty blockers or whatever. They'd probably be confused. Like, because I didn't know if I wanted to be a boy, a girl. I was having a hard time. I couldn't be with a boy without being drunk. I had my first sexual intercourse sober when I was in my 30s. I felt so scared and so horrible even having sex with a man until I was 30. Even to this day, I feel very, like, you know, I have kind of a negative, I guess,
vulnerable, right?
Outlook. Like, I'm with a wonderful man right now, but I've always had a very negative outlook on men, I guess, that they're just out to kind of use women and out
but
to
sport
hurt.
Helped you, right? And
yes,
the thing is, what we're doing is we're robbing that.
So if I go back, I always did get into sports. So I was always into sports. So, I mean, that was always one of my other outlets besides I did drink, but I was always playing sports, right? So I did play sports my whole life. So, I mean, when I was drinking, I would always make an honest effort to be involved in athletics. And when I do my speeches, when I go to speaking engagements, if I didn't have my sporting background along, you know, obviously I was drinking, I probably would have died, right? Like I probably would have succumbed to my alcoholism, because when I, before I did get sober, which was only 5 years ago, actually, I don't know if you know that, I got sober in 2019. My doctor gave me like basically 2 years to live. And so I went into rehab September 2019. And she's like, yeah, if you don't quit drinking, you're going to die. So I checked myself into rehab and like it just, I was like, okay, that's it. So I quit. And I probably wouldn't have survived if I didn't have that like desire to live, but also the athletic background, right? Because I always made an effort to try to eat healthy or try to work out or do some type of sport, right? But when I got out of rehab, that's when I really started crushing it at the gym, worked out every day, started powerlifting. So
I explain, like, literally there's a list of how much sport helps girls. I don't know if you want me to go through this, but like there's like physical health benefits. Like just what I want people to imagine when I'm saying these things and what I'm going to say next is that any time you impede access or fairness to girls in sport, you're robbing them of the opportunity to experience what this is. And so, first of all, obviously there's the physical health. You have better sleep, better weight management, increased muscle mass, strength. Reduced obesity, right? Improves your bone health. So you won't get osteoporosis when you're an old lady as much. So you have stronger bones. You get all of this physical, like lowering of the blood sugar and cholesterol and all that. And then you have the mental health stuff, which is, you know, higher body esteem. And you have self-confidence, reduced anxiety, improved sense of personal identity. So identity, if girls go into sports, a lot of times they resolve a lot of identity issues too within themselves. They find friendships, obviously, but it boosts your happiness and just your whole, you know, beta, you know, how you feel about yourself and your personal satisfaction. And finally, the social advancement in sport. Like you're going to have more opportunities to be a leader, more opportunities to learn how to lose properly. Like a lot of little girls, you lose once and you think, oh, I'm not good at this. I'm going to go away. If you're in sports, you say, okay, I lost this time. But these are the strategies I can use to get better next time. It's not the end of the world. I'm going to try harder. I'm going to win next time. So if you have a fair environment where you can play out success and failure and understand it, you're going to have a lot more opportunities to succeed in life, to go into business. In fact, the best experiment in this is Title IX, the 50 years of Title IX since 1972. Before Title IX, very few girls were in school sports or university sports. It's after Title IX, between Title IX and, of course, current time, there's been like a 6,000% increase in women and girls in sports. And what they notice now is when you look at women in like the corporate like leadership in multinational corporations, 95% of the women who are leaders in like corporations
played sports.
They played sports. So I'm just telling you that the value of sports, if a girl wants to do it, not everybody, you know, some girls go into music, other girls do other things. But if you are able to do sport and you find happiness and satisfaction in any sport, if it's perceived to be a fair environment and safe, girls can thrive and you're actually learning to have, you know, empowerment and all kinds of amazing ways of improving yourself. When you break down the fairness and girls know that no matter what they do, they're going to lose, not only are you losing all of those benefits that girls get from sport, you're actually teaching them learned helplessness. You're literally teaching girls they're not good enough. And they go away and they don't learn. They don't get that opportunity. Why would we do that? Like, guys have their sports. They already have a category for themselves.
I feel like, and I could be wrong on this, but I think most men will agree with me, probably a healthy.
Yeah.
I don't want to play female sports.
Right.
I don't think why would I, you? I don't. Yeah. Why would I? Yeah. Exactly. I don't want to.
Yeah.
And so you go, all those great things is why I like playing men's sports, because it's kind of like a men.
Yeah.
Not saying
it's a brotherhood. It's a brotherhood.
Right. And when there's no women around, you speak different. Yeah, I'm sure women, when there's no men around, speak a little differently as well. As soon as you have somebody cross that barrier, it changes things. Then you take where like I'm thinking the swimmers, I'm thinking Riley Gaines and all that, where they're undressing and getting into their swimsuits and everything, and you just take all the safety away from it, right? Like it's already
it's predatory. I mean, their only way any man is going to be going into a women's dressing room is fundamentally at the core of it, he's a predator.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to argue with you because
I mean, he wanted, it's a self, you know, obviously there's a fetish involved, but it's basically using women and girls for your own getting off on whatever. Like, so it's still predatory because you're using them to get what you want. Some thrill, some cheap thrill, some feeling superior because you make them feel uncomfortable. It's a psychological play, and it's predatory. And it's so obvious the way Leah Thomas was acting. He wasn't trying to save anybody discomfort. He wanted to see them uncomfortable with his presence there. He wanted that. It helped his fetish.
And did I read, forgive me if I'm getting this wrong, did I not read that he was in a relationship with a girl?
Yeah.
While this was all going on? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not wrong on that, right?
No, and then he had secret, like, online accounts where he was showing bloodied women's bodies. Like, it's
messed up, right? Because not only did he, you know, all the story, all the stuff that's come up from Riley Gaines' testimony and others, I should point out, not just her, is, like, how messed up it was around everything to do with that.
Exactly. I mean, the officials not telling, because Riley wasn't on Leah Thomas's team. She only encountered that at the national championships. So the NCAA leadership and the Georgia Tech organizers, that's where it was. That's in Atlanta. That was that NCAA championship was at that location. They did not warn the women on other teams, hey, look, there might be a man in your dressing room. Because Penn State has this guy, or University of Pennsylvania, Penn has this guy, this person. Of course, they'd never say guy because they're too woke, but he was a guy. And they weren't warned. So Riley is in there changing, according to what I've heard her say. She's in there, all of a sudden there's this big, huge man in there with her. Like, it's sick. It's sick, and it's just indecent exposure. It should be illegal. I mean, until yesterday, it was illegal to do that. Right? Like, why would you have a guy, fully intact male, 6 foot tall, 6 foot three, changing next to all the girls in the changing room? Like, it's just, I don't know. It boggles the mind.
Don't ask me. We have a swimmer in Ontario going in and changing with little girls. So the law protects
a man,
protects them. So
And the police,
Trudeau.
I'm sure you've seen Rebel News reporting on that. Yeah. When they call the police, like the venue says, oh, there's a guy from, you know, Menzoid is coming and reporting on this.
He gets arrested.
He gets in trouble, and he's saying, wait. Right behind you in here, there's a man in the little girl's change room. Yeah. It's an urgent, this is why I can stay out here on the sidewalk. You go get the guy out of there. And they said, no, that's none of our business. We're just here to deal with you trespassing. Like, it really blows my mind. I don't know. You met the Menzoid, right?
Yeah, I'm good friends with David Menzies, actually. And But I think there's other things wrong with that picture, too. I mean, like, I'm not going to sit here and blame the police at all for that one, because they're honestly just doing their job. But, but I am almost, like, blaming the parents, too, because I'm like, where's the father? The fathers? I'm always asking where the fathers
parents
are.
Parents have a heavy load in this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We've married to a teacher, right?
Right.
And through not just... Like, I shouldn't say just her, but, like, I mean, teachers in general, because I get to meet lots of teachers, right? Yeah. Like, And once again, not in BC where, like, you know, the trans stuff is like gender affirming is like huge. You know, Saskatchewan's pulled everything third party. Alberta is pushing hard and on and on. But like the stories I hear from teachers is pretty horrific on the side of lack of parent involvement. Mm-hmm. You know, like everyone blames, oh, I'm just so busy at work. I'm just so busy. Mm-hmm. There's some pretty heartbreaking stories out there of, you know, kids being put in tough positions and where's the parent? And I think, you know, no matter how insane our government goes, right? You talk about the man in the girls' change rooms. Heck, even do the drag time story hour. Mm-hmm. That's on parents too, right? Taking them there and thinking that's like,
yeah, we have a parenting crisis.
I would agree. Like parents need to own up, like step up. Like this is serious times. Mm-hmm. And you know, your kids are the ones in the crosshairs. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you look through they've been in the crosshairs for a long time. You get the kids, you get a whole different future, right?
Yeah. Well, part of my PhD studies at Simon Fraser University in the early 90s was body composition, like growth and development of children. And we're looking at the childhood obesity issue and obesity issue. And, you know, it did occur to me even back in the 90s that part of that issue, part of the problem is still parenting, because we had that whole latchkey kids, you know, like the parents are at work, both parents working 9 to 5, and a lot of families can't help it. I mean, if they have to work, fine, but the kids get out of school at 3. So obesity doesn't happen, like not every hour of the day has the same level of responsibility for obesity. Let's put it that way. When you're sleeping from, let's say, even if you only go to bed at midnight to 7, you're not eating, and so those hours aren't responsible for obesity. And if you have a good breakfast in the morning, which not all those kids would, but if you have a good that hour is not responsible for obesity. So when does obesity happen? Well, probably
3 to 5. Well, and if they stay up to midnight, 3 to midnight.
Exactly, right. So what I found was interesting is because I'm a coach, and when I moved to Alberta, I thought I would be a university professor, and I didn't get that job.
Thankfully not.
It was Ralph Klein times, and there were just no positions because there's a lot of cuts going on. And then I was lucky to run into the Oilers, and I started doing, you know, sport performance fitness. So I could schedule being home when my kids came home from school. And I lived fairly close to the schools. And so because I coach in the evenings, I always cook. So when my kids come home at 3, I would cook from like 1 to, you know, or 1:30 to, like I had a meal ready because I had to reheat it later anyway, right? So there was like a fresh, like crock pot or a good food, like a stir fry. Like when they walked in the door, that my kids literally had a good like snack even then, if they wanted to have some of the food. And pretty soon we got like the friend came with them, the like 3 more friends came with them. And what's interesting to me is if there's a crock pot of stew there going on and it's delicious and it's healthy, and the stew was here and the bag of chips and pop were right over here. And I'm sorry, I have to admit they had them in the house, but you know what? I watch those kids. You come from school. If there's an option, did they grab the chips? No way. They'd grab a bowl and they'd fill up with stew and have stew. They would prefer to have healthy food if it was available. And so that just showed me, you know, like maybe, I don't know, maybe our whole system is set up. Maybe they should all get home at 5 together with the parents. Like, I don't know, because I mean, a lot of it at that time was, I was just thinking, man. And then I had one time where I ran for a nomination race for the Conservative Party of Canada back in 2009. And I remember campaigning and nobody's at home. Nobody's ever at home. Like, why don't kids play in the street in the neighborhoods? Because, you know, in the old days, you think if kids are playing in the neighborhood, if a kid got hurt, you could always go to that neighbor, that mom's home. Like, you could always run somewhere if something happened, right? Nobody's home. Nobody's ever home. So even back, that was the 90s and 2000s. Like, I've known since then there's just something fundamental that we've lost in terms of the family structure or the parenting or our ability to do it. Something's gone on, and I think what we're seeing now with this trans stuff and the gender ideology, because the kids are nobody's there to block them from thinking something weird. That when a cult comes along, nobody can talk about it. Like, they don't have a communication.
We went to our, so, you know, like, I don't think this is a shock to any listener, and probably not to you two.
Yeah.
Family doctors are hard to come by, right?
Yeah.
And so even our family here, we've bounced through. We had a family doctor, and then she left. And so then, since then, it's kind of been like a struggle. And mm-hmm. so we finally, Mel finally got the kids in for a yearly checkup, just to mm-hmm. just to get them. She just wants them checked up to, you know. And so anyways, it's interesting as our kids get older. My oldest now is 8, mm-hmm. and then our daughter is 6, and our youngest is 4. And it's funny, it was the first time we've had a doctor's appointment where they're talking directly to our kids instead mm-hmm. of to us, because mm-hmm. they're old enough to answer questions. I'm like, oh, I want, yeah, hope we pass this, you yeah, know, this yeah, card. Yeah. And it was asking how much, the question was, how much are you on your tablet? And my son didn't understand. What do you mean? Well, how much do you play on your tablet? And he's like, oh, we'll get it for a couple hours on the weekend. And she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I'm not allowed on it during the week. And the doctor didn't, she looked at us and said, how do you do that? And I'm like, what do you mean, how do I do that? And, you know, like, I'm confused now,
yeah.
because mm-hmm. she's trying to pry how much screen time our kids get.
Yeah.
And I'm not, let me be very clear, I'm not perfect on this.
Yeah, no,
but we do have things in place.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, well, you don't understand how many kids come in here. And they literally watch screen time every night.
All night. Oh, yeah. From the time they come home from school.
Screens in their rooms and have screen. And she was shocked at how, and I was shocked by her, you know, like, so you go like, it's compounding, yeah. Linda, I guess, yeah. is what I'm getting yeah. at, right? Yeah. You're talking about how people are eating now, and yeah. you tack that on now with all the social media that we're all, I don't find either of you without social media, right? So it has yeah. its pros.
Oh, it's great.
But also, like, the access to, like, Saturday morning cartoons as a kid, you'd have to wake up at 7 in the morning,
yeah.
and it lasted till 11.
Yeah.
And then now, it was done. Now my kids get up at 7, and they can watch it till 4 in the afternoon, and they can watch whatever they want
yeah.
for as long as they want, if you don't put in restrictions yeah. and time limits and different things,
we're just
right?
We're talking about
that on the drive out, how kids need to have boundaries. Like, they're looking, humanity, like the way we think, we want to find where's the boundary, and they're pushing. If you don't give them boundaries, they go, it really is mentally taxing and, like, spiritually taxing, really, when a child doesn't know where the limits are, where if it's endless time and space and you can do whatever you like. At some point, there has to be structure. I mean, human, we're built for that. And if adults don't give them, like, this is the line, now you can't go over that line, like, that makes them happy. That actually helps them, because it gives them something, peace of mind. Okay, that's the line. Okay, I get it. That's the line.
But that's why there's no one in the streets. And that's why yeah. there's nowhere to run to. It's because, I swear, social media has been the worst thing yeah. that's happened in 20
yeah.
years. Like,
yeah. It's mm-hmm. the childhood you see today is so different.
Yeah.
Than the 70s and
oh,
80s,
yeah.
Right? Like, so different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I grew up in South America, so that's a completely different story. I'm running around.
I think the 80s child was the, yeah. that was the last good
you
decade.
Think so? The last good decade.
But,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you think every generation is going to say the last?
They might.
They yeah. always look, you always mm-hmm. look back and go, it was better in the 50s. And yeah. I'm sure the 50s thought, yeah. you know, and because, you know, you look at the technology yeah. advancements. Yeah. One point they thought, having black and white television was a bad thing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to corrupt the mind. Oh, the radio. And you go, like, this is wonderful. I think being able to find you two lovely individuals is wonderful.
Yeah.
I just, you know, you have to understand, like, you have to, I think parents, and maybe all of us, even if you're not a parent, have to educate ourselves on how dangerous, and I'm staring at my phone,
it can be.
How dangerous of it is, because it's addictive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you're talking about alcohol. I think we are beginning to understand
yeah.
or know deep down how addictive alcohol, drugs, obviously,
yeah.
food, television is.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I think people forget and haven't learned yet how addictive their phone is and how it's programmed. Right,
yeah.
to just constantly buzz and beep yeah. at you and find different ways. They're trying to pull you in at all times.
Yeah. Well, yeah, even like with even lately, I was talking to Linda about this, how the last month I haven't been sleeping that well, and I've mm-hmm. had increased anxiety. And I feel like I have to go through, it's like a device, was a detox, and I have to literally shut this off, I think even just at 8 o'clock, because I literally, it's keeping me up at night because I'm not shutting it off, and I'm just like, it really is. I'm not sleeping as much. And I just like, it's, yeah, it's just like obviously going on Twitter and having, I feel like the need to have to post and I have to keep up on stuff. And like, obviously doing what I'm doing is like, I feel like it's a full-time job too. Right. So, but yeah, it's, yeah.
So having all that now, having said all of that, bringing it full circle back to women's sports, I find the same thing as you do, Sean, and basically finding April, finding the Fair Play for Women in the UK, finding all these women around the world, you know, like Catherine Deaves in Australia and Rowena Edge in New Zealand. Like, I can go country by country. We have been finding each other when we have concern about some issue. So that's the good part about it. Like, you can go on a Zoom call with women. Never in the history of the world have women been able to, like, you might be in your relative villages, but you can actually talk to somebody who's absolutely on the other side of the world, who has the same concern, and you can talk about it with each other, get together, try to, you know, formulate some policy you want to put forward, advocate, then write a letter to the United Nations. I'm telling you, there are good things about it. And in as far as this fight, we almost have to use the same strategies that the trans activists used when we weren't watching, because this whole thing with men and women's sports and basically gender identity ideology in general, it started in the 90s in a big way with a few guys at the Yogyakarta principles, like at the United Nations level, also in the university sector. It was like spreading subterraneously. We didn't realize it. And that's why now it pops up everywhere you look. But they were just advocating at you know, levels that we had no idea. And they were doing it. They were doing the hard work of talking to the right leaders and getting the right preferred policy in place.
Setting the board.
They set the board, and now it's playing out. But see, now we see it, and the majority don't agree with them. And eventually, we can push back by using the same technology, in a sense. We can use their tactics as well, but we just are behind. And that's why I think we're going to win.
And you probably have the thing that at times is overwhelming is it seems like it's going on everywhere all at once. You're like, how did this?
Yeah.
And so the issue you have is like all the institutions compromised. It feels like all the politicians won't speak out because they feel like they have nobody to stand up and be like, no, you're doing the right thing. The loud voice is the activists, right? Yeah. They're loud. And yet it's got to be, you know, if it isn't 95% of the population, it's majority of the population just disagrees with what's going on.
Yeah, and right? We've all had our heads down and sort of said, well, you know, I'll just mind my own business. I mean, it's crazy, but I'll just mind my own. But at some point, it does come to get you, and it comes to get your children, and it comes to get our sports. And at some point, we say, uh-uh, not anymore. This is too far.
You feel like that's happening right now?
I feel that. I really feel like that's what's happening.
So are we going to see more of a change here in Canada then? Like you two
I predict it. It'll probably take another 10 years to be complete, but I think it'll take a good election. I think we need a change of government, frankly. And
well, we need a change of government for a lot of different reasons, right?
Yeah, like exactly.
Trudeau's making an absolute mockery of our country on a lot of different levels. It's not just this. It's a lot of different levels. It's always, I don't know. Like, you know, is the word shocking? Like 10 years, like a decade to get back to where this isn't a thing, you know?
That's
like,
what I'm saying. It's gone so far down the crazy road that it's going to take a lot of heavy lifting, whether it's laws, policies, legislation, like the rule books, like put them all back to where they were.
Do you think that's possible?
Yes, I think it is. I have a lot of faith that we can do that.
And then we're just going to have an open division where trans athletes can...
Or a third, like it depends on the sport. Like you could have mixed divisions, but I mean, even then you have to acknowledge biological sex. So at some point, even if you have co-ed sport, let's say you have like ultimate frisbee and you're going to have like the same number of men and women on each side. You still have to say who's the man, who's the woman here. And we only have like a distributed number. Like you have to acknowledge biological sex. And that's what's interesting to me. Even yesterday when I was at the trans and sport rally at Edmonton at the legislature, What was interesting is one of the girls who identifies as trans or non-binary stands up there and says, I am a female-born person who identifies as trans. So she knows. They know they're born one way. You can't be trans unless you were born one way and changed. You have to acknowledge how you were born.
That's a start.
That's the fundamental piece right there. And they try to pretend after that that, oh, that the sex part never happened. No, that's how you're trans, if you say you are, which I don't really accept it. It's a thought, but it's a thought experiment with yourself. But I'm saying you start one way and you have to acknowledge that's it's one way or the other. And that's how you started. We can't go through it. Like, it just doesn't make sense. If we had no, and we said this last time on the podcast, I mean, I said it. If biological sex is not a thing, doesn't exist, we wouldn't be eating. We'd starve to death. I mean, even plants have a male and female. Like, I mean, you need it. We live in a biosphere. We can't go on pretending like it doesn't exist. And it does matter. And so let's just get back to that point. Not shy away from saying that.
probably not shying away from it. More people need to catch that bug.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of people haven't found their voice and just think it's going to go away. Right? And maybe are realizing, oh, wait, this is coming to roost in a lot of different places that I didn't realize would happen, right?
Well, unintended, because Jody Wilson-Raybould, who was our justice minister in the first, when Trudeau first got elected, she was the Aboriginal, the Native woman from BC, who was our first, like, amazing.
Who got caught up in the
SNC-Lavalin, right? Yeah. So he treated her terribly. And then just, I don't know if you noticed, on Monday during the eclipse, you remember that speech he made when he first got elected? Sunny ways, folks, sunny ways. Well, about how great Canada was going to be. And now Canada's all falling apart. And he stands on the roof of Parliament with his
moron.
and he's going, sunny ways, sunny ways. And you know what? That's a complete troll on the Canadian people because he knows it's not sunny ways right now. And then, you know who noticed? Jody Wilson-Raybould. Did you see her tweet? Oh, ho, ho, ho. Look it up, man. It's like she quote tweeted that, him saying sunny ways. She quote tweets him something like, you know, take your dog, your shed, they're this and that, and shove it where the sun don't shine. She literally told him that on Twitter. And I was like, what? a former minister of Trudeau is actually telling him that, and she was treated very poorly. And so I point
that. She says, you can take your house, the dog, I'll even load it in my car. Take your mother, your brother, and all your tacky friends. I'll even rent you a U-Haul to haul you all in. Stick it in the darkest place that you can find. Take your love and put it where the sun don't shine. Ray Stevens.
So for an ex-minister of Prime Minister Trudeau to be saying that is incredible. And when I pointed that out, all the women, of course, that I know in this fight, they're going, yeah, but she's responsible for Bill C-16. She is. But I bet she didn't understand the consequences. What are the consequences as far as even like men and women's prisons? You know that in Alberta, 80% of the women in female prisons are Aboriginal descent. So when you allow a white male rapist to be going in there with a woman in the prisons, I don't think for a minute Jody Wilson-Raybould wanted that to happen. She didn't know that would be the consequence of Bill C-16. That's what I'm saying. And I think sometimes people do things and they make legislation that they don't realize they're literally, in that moment, she subjected her sisters to a possible male rapist self-identifying into the prison cell. Did she know that a prison warden would take Bill C-16 and interpret it that way? I don't think any one of those MPs thought that that would be interpreted that way. But Jordan Peterson warned that that's how it would be interpreted. Meghan Murphy warned. Gad Saad warned. All these people warned. And the senators were just going, you are, oh, you're just exaggerating. No, it's exactly
you're Chicken Little. And I wish they would have a little more forethought and where this is all gone, because all those people you just rattled off have been bang on.
Right. They've been right. And actually, certainly would help. Shout out to Jody Wilson-Weybold. But if you would come out and say, yeah, we didn't anticipate these problems with Bill C-16. Maybe we should amend it or do something with that bill. That would help.
Have you seen a politician, Linda, come out and say they were wrong?
Very rarely. There have been. But yeah, I mean,
as much time as I'll give some politicians, which isn't much, it's one of the things that drives me the... It just irritates me because I don't know. I'm going to speak like I can get into a politician's mind, but it shows weakness, and they think then it goes to the polls and everything else. And I just go, like, if you get something wrong, let's clean it up, because this is, we keep going down these paths of like getting darker and darker and darker. Everybody can see how insane it is.
Yeah.
You know, like at this point, you could be sitting in the Liberal Party going, like, are we really going to keep going down this way? Why can't we just like reverse course? You know?
Well, and then the carbon tax, half of them are going to lose their seats over that. And I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling what's happening and why politicians, when they make a mistake, cannot say, look, I didn't anticipate that that's how it would be taken. We got to put some more restrictions in or some more sort of advisories in about, you know, like in the UK when they did the equivalent Equalities Act, which is also the gender identity thing, they literally said they had sex-based exemptions. They literally put the exemptions in there, women's sports. There were things they put in there knowing that if you say, your human rights say that you can't discriminate on the basis of gender identity or gender expression, you still have to have a space for biological reality and sex-based provisions. Unfortunately, the Liberal government in Canada was too dumb to realize you needed the sex-based exemption. So they just put the Bill C-16 in there. Jordan Peterson was trying to tell them, no, you can't just do it like that. And they weren't listening. And they didn't look at what other countries like UK did to protect, you know, sex-based categories like women's sports. So that was a big mistake. And I really, really hope that, you know, when and if Polyev and the Conservatives get in, they start to undo this crap, because it's just, that bill is very damaging, including Bill C-4, which is the conversion therapy, which isn't conversion therapy. It's
who's the, and forgive me, I've had her on the podcast and I'm forgetting her name right now. She's from New York.
Kara Dansky?
No.
Oh, Jennifer Bielik?
Jennifer Bielik.
Yeah.
You know, when you listen to her and see how much big money is tied up in this, you think, like, it doesn't feel like it's going to be that easy, where it's just like, you know, common sense just walks in and do it. And right. Yeah. When you got rich billionaire men,
who's funding it? We still have to figure. I mean, we still need to know specifically when it comes to Canadians. I know there's billionaires out there that are promoting the ideology. I know that. And they pay off certain groups and certain people. Like, I have a strong, strong, strong feeling that even at the Olympic level, somebody got paid, you know, somebody got something. Because you're not going to ruin your credibility as the brand. Like, you're literally ruining your brand when you allow men into women's sports. Mm-hmm. You're ruining your brand. And they're even going to put their brand at risk to promote the ideology. Man, to me, that means somebody got something to do this. It has to mean that, because the brand, can think of how, like, it's worth billions itself, the brand, the Olympic brand.
It's probably worth, like.
That's the same with the Canadian Powerlifting Union.
Yeah.
They've admitted that they're going to lose money if they speak out.
Yeah. So somebody somewhere in all of these things, it's like, man, if you had real, real transparency on where the flow of the money is going to promote this, I think we'd all be shocked. Maybe not shocked. Maybe it'd explain a lot of things.
Maybe it'd explain a lot of things.
Yeah, that's what I think too. But I still think, because people want to get voted into office, now that more and more of the public is finding out about it through things like this, through podcasts and, you know, Twitter and everything, I really think that over time the public is just going to be educated about it. They're catching up to where, you know, I've been in it for 6 years. People are catching up. They're finding out, you're seeing more and more. In fact, Sean, it's almost impossible for me to keep up even now with Twitter or who's saying what. So many people now are
Or talking.
Talking, right? And it's almost impossible.
Like, I would say, Linda, I think when you said a decade, I actually would say less than a decade.
You think?
Just because, like, this is kind of, like, I think everyone's got their own take on this. Yeah. And just for me, I feel like things really kind of exploded after COVID. Yeah. I think there was a lot of people sitting at home during COVID, and I think that's when this whole trans thing just really exploded. I feel like this everyone went back to work, and I just thought it really blossomed after that. And I think because to me, I really didn't hear a lot of it. I heard a little bit of it. I mean decades, or maybe 10 or 20 years ago, you've heard of, like, you know, not transsexuals, but there was cross dressers. Men and women's sports wasn't really a thing. I mean, until maybe the last, I don't know, how many years would you think?
Well, since at least, I would say probably 2019, when the Connecticut boys were there, like it started to become a bigger and bigger thing.
And then there was Laura Hubbard.
Oh, and then Rachel McKinnon.
Yeah. And then Olympic
cyclist.
Laura. And then Laura Hubbard.
Laura Hubbard.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But anyways.
2021. Yeah.
And then we started openly talking about it, but even when I started talking about it, even just alone on my Facebook and social media platforms, people would be like, they wouldn't even touch it. They were like too afraid. And then some people that were very like more liberal or leftist would be like, oh my God, you're so transphobic. And I'd be like, okay, well, we're not going to have a discussion, right? Or they would just delete or block me, right? But now, and that's when I was alone, right? And that's when I found you. And then all of a sudden, I wasn't alone, and it was almost like a snowball. And then all of a sudden, I had a couple more people behind me. And then I found Icons and Riley. And now I have a whole freaking army behind me. Like, and now I can literally say I have like 99% of the population behind me. Like, I feel like so supported.
List all the people you've been interviewed by.
Like, I just talked to Jordan Peterson. Like, he literally just called me on the phone. We chit-chatted for like a half an hour. I did a podcast with his wife. Linda, the only person I literally haven't talked to is Joe Rogan. I think I've talked to like Tucker and like everyone else, and
Megyn Kelly.
And then like I've talked to everyone, and now like I post something on Facebook, I got 100 people like commenting, going, "You go, girl!" Like all this support, and
it's amazing.
It's overwhelming.
We're so proud of you.
Yeah, and even just going into a restaurant. In small town, hey, you're April Hutchins. Like, it's just awesome.
At lunch.
Yeah, and it's not that I want to be recognized, but I do, because I'm getting recognized for something, for helping a great cause, and for something I am passionate about.
I love the hopefulness.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll contradict it with is it's so steeped into law now.
Mm.
And if I've learned anything about politics and law and everything, it moves at such a snail's pace.
Mm.
Now, in saying that, it doesn't have to, because when the fire's underneath, you see politicians move real fast.
Mm-hmm.
But you think this is what when you go with Jordan Peterson, speaking of Jordan Peterson talking to you, you remember, like, I was late to the Jordan Peterson. Well, I think, you know, certain people watched it. What was it, 2016?
Yeah.
When he's testifying, maybe, and then it's 2018 again.
Yeah.
And I'm going, what is he talking about? Like, I just couldn't even wrap my brain around it. Here we are 6 years later, maybe longer, 6 to 8 years later.
Yeah.
And we're starting to see exactly how crazy it got from them putting into law the pronouns, and now it isn't humankind, or it's not mankind. It's got to be peoplekind, and it's got to be on and it goes, and you just, like, we're into stupid land.
Yeah.
We're so far, and so when you go 10 years, I'm like, well, it took us 8 years to get into this.
Yeah.
Maybe longer, probably longer, and so 10 years actually doesn't seem that unreasonable to me. I hope April's right with the because I like a little bit of positivity.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that in this studio.
Well,
I like that.
But I think that's where it's shifted. So a year ago, I was kind of captured too. Like a year ago, I was like, oh, I have to use pronouns. Like, I actually have a workplace where it says you have to, you know, I work for a government or a city job. I actually had trans activists go after my job. And that's why I talked to Jordan, because I said, hey, Jordan, we have a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. So I said, I had trans activists go after my job. And I went into my workplace and I said, I'll just let you know that I do not believe that a man can ever become a woman. But I will tell you, I'm always respectful in my workplace. If my policy says that I have to use pronouns, which I never have had to use in my work, but I will always be kind. I'll always treat people with respect. I will use them. And then I said, okay, well, let's go through these complaints. And they took 50 screenshots of all my tweets. So I sat through all the tweets that they submitted. And they actually said, April, you're actually really respectful to all of them, like on all your tweets. And I actually, one of the tweets was like, or one of the messages to the trans activist was, would you like to sit down and have tea? We can discuss if you want to have a meaningful conversation. Like that was one of my messages to them. So they dismissed it. And I didn't lose my job. And they said, no, you're a good employee. So like, but I told Jordan that. And I was just like, but like what I'm saying is like, I was actually a year ago, I was very captured. And I was like, oh, I have to use pronouns. Someone called me a bigot. And I was like, oh my God, someone called me a bigot. Like, oh my God. Like I was just freaking out. But now people actually don't even call me a bigot anymore. Yeah. Or transphobic even. But before it used to like bother me. Now it just rolls off my shoulder. Oh. I don't care. Because I know who I am. I'm a good person. I mean, but wanting fairness is not transphobic. You know what I mean? So like.
A lot of people are over it though. Like.
Yeah, over
you
it.
You know, I'm just thinking, you know, the humans learn. So, you know, time doesn't stand still. We're not where we were in 2016. We're way more aware of all this crap and where it takes us, you know. And the truth is. Like, okay, we're all old enough to remember when the phone rang, you should pick it up, right? Like the phone was really important, the phone call before the cell phone times. And then you started getting robocalls. Well, then.
And then you started getting the telemarketer at supper time.
Yes.
Right? they figured out real fast that people were sitting around the table.
Yeah, but then people just decided, you know, we won't answer the phone. I mean, if it's ringing, and so, who cares? But
let it go to the voicemail,
right?
Or the message.
You ignore it now, right?
Yeah, it was like block.
It's the same. Delete. You ignore once somebody's abused it too much, you ignore it, and that's what's happening with our language police. You tell me I'm supposed to say this word or
well,
not
actually,
that word.
Now comedy's starting to get a hold of it, right? Because you know, like, I chuckle. You know, the mashup which airs on Fridays, right? For people. That wonder where that show went. It was a Tuesday mashup. We moved it to Friday mornings. Mm-hmm. We read the newspapers over and over and over again, and sometimes it gets a bit too much. But the lovely thing about Tues is, you know, he loves to just implement a little bit of humor into it, right?
Yeah,
like,
because
everything's trying to appease everybody, right?
Yeah.
Can't call you fat. We got to call you a high calorie human, which is even funnier.
I
right?
know.
It's hilarious, right? That we have all these ways of trying to make everybody feel good about themselves instead of just, you know, my grandmother, she just used to call a spade a spade. It hurt,
yeah.
And then you got over it and you went on with life. But she comes from a generation that lived through one world war, depression. She lost a son when he was like, I forget what Tommy was. Forgive me on this. Was it 13, 12? Got hit by a train here in town. Right? Ooh, so she went through things. And there was just no space for trying to make you feel good about being overweight. It's like, listen, maybe you put down the Doritos, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe
you
get out and exercise a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, you think you're a boy? You're not.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget it. Like, and so we need more adults in the room to say those things, to say, no, that's not true. Just, you know, not buying that. And I think a lot of people are getting there. A lot more than before, I think.
I hope you're both right. I appreciate the optimism. I think anytime you step in here and there's optimism, you know, because the episode right before you, fine ladies, is Drew McGilvery. Mm-hmm. And he's Veterans for Freedom. And he's talking about some of the things in the military coming down, you know, and there's some pretty tough stuff he's talking about in there where you're just like, man alive, we're in a dire situation here in Canada. We don't have the leader at the helm of this ship that's going to turn it around. Actually, it feels like he's driving it straight into the cliff, you know. And when it comes to men competing against women, he's all for it.
Oh, yeah.
And thinks there's nothing wrong, right?
Yeah.
So it's and, you know.
One more year, my friend.
One more year. I know, but that's the thing. We've still got another year to go.
But, I mean, and how much damage can be done in that year, too. But I just think, you know, honestly, we just have to hang on for dear life until we change the government.
And Linda and I aren't going anywhere.
Well, I'm going to India.
Well, you are, but no.
I'm moving to India, actually.
But, are you moving to India?
Yeah, Hyderabad.
But I'm saying you're going to keep fighting. And that's what I said to Linda. Like, I literally found my calling through powerlifting. Like, I love my advocacy for this. And, like, I feel like I'm such a strong person, and I just like I love fighting for this, and I've found other strong females, and like I just want to continue fighting. So I mean, I think and you will too, whether you're in India or wherever.
Well, internationally, we need still more advocacy at the international sports level anyway. So I mean, I can work anywhere.
What on earth are you doing in India?
Well. My husband's dean of agriculture at U of A. And
yeah, no, I when I made the joke about thank goodness you aren't a professor or didn't get hired,
But anyway, no problem. But no, he there's 2 5-year terms, and now he's got a job with the World Food Security kind of thing, like a international agriculture research stations all over Asia and India, parts
so
of
when
Africa.
So when I take the podcast on the road and go travel the world with
your
family, I'm welcome to come visit
are.
You in India.
Oh, I'm going to visit.
Yeah, you're
going to
come visit me. Yeah, we're at in Hyderabad. And no, it's a big research farm, research station, international. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I mean...
Are you looking forward to getting away from, like, the... Because, you know, you've taken, you know, you've written your book.
Yeah.
You've...
my book.
You've...
Unsporting.
Yeah. If people haven't picked it up, it's... the thing about reading it is... I just thought it laid it out. I think I said this the first time around. But regardless, if you haven't picked it up, it really lays it out nice and simple. Like, there's just some things I remember highlighting. I'm a highlighter. I'm like, oh, man, that's... Well, that's good. Well, that's good, right? And I'm like, okay, I got to stop highlighting every page
nice,
kind of thing.
Thank you.
But it laid it out very well. Like, even thank just, you. Like, simple things on body composition and different straightforward things,
you
know,
you.
That should be.
Yeah.
Are you excited to get away from, not that you're stopping the fight, but, like, at the same time, you live in Edmonton, and Edmonton is...
Well,
we got McDavid,
I won't miss the winters.
Yeah.
Apparently, it'll be super hot, which is the other side of it. But I just think, like... Sometimes if you're in sort of in a different context, but you're living life more outside in the sense of not always, you know, totally sort of on your iPad or, you know, you're going around, you're seeing new cultures, different things, villages. I always enjoyed it. Like before we've done different contracts previously in Africa. And so, you know, I've always been out there and you go through the villages. You live life a little bit differently. And I think it is going to be a break from, just Canadian politics, I guess, in a sense. But I did tell you about my success. When did I come here? Did I tell you about what happened at the policy convention, Conservative Party of Canada?
I don't know if you did or not. I'm remembering... how your husband asked you to marry, and all that. So if
I told you that story. My goodness!
If people want to go back and listen to both of you, right? April's been on.
Yeah.
You've been on.
Yeah, my previous time on. So yeah,
you go back and listen to those.
that was pretty funny.
Anyways, I don't think you have.
No. But so what happened was, in 2022, I realized that every couple of years, the Conservative Party of Canada has a convention, a policy convention. And I thought, I looked at their policy declaration and realized, you know, under the section women, I could actually add a few things and have like sex, you know, sex-based guidelines for like women-only sport and things like that. So I started going to my local EDA meetings, like the local Edmonton Strathcona Conservative Party meetings. And about by December 22, I was like chair of the policy committee. By 2023, the year of the policy convention, then you have to get into a special website where everybody dumps policy ideas into the big ideas lab. And then over time, they whittle them down. So it starts about 200 policies, and only at the very end, by the time September rolls around at the convention, which was in Quebec City this last year, then you have to go through the workshops, and only 30 policies... Of all submissions from across Canada, only 30 policies sort of get passed and put into the Conservative Party Declaration Manual. And we had two from Edmonton Strathcona. The one was women. When the word woman appears in the Conservative Handbook, it means female person. And then so we defined woman, and we had a limit, like a 50-word limit or something of anything we wanted to add. So then I had to squeeze in... The Conservative Party of Canada believes that women deserve female-only programs like sports and spaces like bathrooms. Like it was like this whole thing we put in there, And that one passed. We don't even have a sitting MP. Heather McPherson is like the NDP person, and Edmonton is my MP. So we didn't even have a champion, but it was almost unheard of that Edmonton Strathcona, one riding, could get two policies without any champion into the policy. So we had one, which was the women's one. And then the other one, a lawyer on our EDA board, wanted to do something that applied to what Jordan Peterson's going through, no ideological indoctrination as a condition of employment. And both of those made it and now are sitting in the Conservative Party of Canada policy manual so that when and if Polyev gets into power, he has the option now of following up.
And then the population needs to put his feet to the fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he is the...
he's a bit slippery, maybe, but like...
Well, he's a poll guy, right? He looks at the polls and he goes, oh, they're against this. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm against it.
Okay.
Oh, they're for this. Yeah. Oh, over
but
here.
But that's the point. At least we have a chance. If it's part of the Conservative Party platform, or at least in their policy declaration, at least then when you pressure them, you say, look, it's in your policy. Do something about Bill C-16. Do something about it. At least it gives us a fighting chance that he might. So we'll see.
Well, I appreciate both of you ladies coming in here. We're going to take a brief pause because we're going to do a clip. We're going to do a 5-minute last question here for Substack and have a little bit of fun there. I'm going to invite everybody to come over there. Obviously, you know what to do. Come on over to Substack with us, and we'll see what we can cook up with Linda and April.